The book cover you see behind me is called A Pocket Guide to Korea. It was presented to my Army officer father upon our family's arrival in South Korea in 1970. It was meant as a guide for Army personnel for interacting with the Korean people. I invite you to listen to a couple of excerpts and consider the advice given in light of our congregation's planned partnerships with marginalized groups. Living and working in Korea will require a certain amount of adjustment on your part. It is important to remember you are the foreigner in Korea. The country was not designed as a home for Americans, even though the Korean people have tried to accommodate our needs and our taste as best they can. They admire some of our ideas and methods, but they do not admire all of them, nor do they want all of them. The Korean people have a deep pride in their history, culture, customs, and way of life, just as we have in ours. Don't brag about how much better we do things or about the material aid we are giving to Korea. The Koreans are grateful for our assistance and don't need to be reminded of it. If a Korean mentions the subject, you can point out that it is in the interest of the United States, as well as of Korea, that the country become strong and maintain its independence. So as I was listening to my friend Elsa speak about her experience in Indonesia, I thought, well, there's a lot of that that also impacted Korea, especially in terms of Japanese occupation. So ask anyone today what they know about Korea, and chances are they have a very positive image of a modern nation with a thriving economy, which is true. And it's why it's so hard to remember that less than 40 years ago, it was still a nation devastated by occupation and war. I think of Korea as the Poland of Asia, a relatively small country with a strong ethnic identity located between two world superpowers. In Korea's case, those two superpowers are China and Japan, both of which have historically coveted the Korean Peninsula. From the turn of the century until World War II, the Japanese did more than covet. They occupied Korea with brutal authority. At the end of the war, Korea was divided up in a fashion similar to Germany, between the Allied countries, half to the Allied countries in the south, half to Soviet Union in the north. Less than 5 years later, in 1950, war broke out when soldiers from the North Korean People's Army crossed over the 38th parallel, the boundary between the two Koreas. American troops would soon enter on behalf of South Korea, and Chinese troops on the behest of the Soviets to North Korea. 3 bloody years later, an armistice was signed. So, when my family of six arrived in South Korea in 1970, it was to a very different country than it is today. Upon arrival in Seoul, we were picked up and driven 3 hours to Camp Walker, an American Army post near the city of Daegu. I can still remember looking out the windows of our staff car as we drove through the countryside in stunned silence. Instead of cars, the two-lane road was filled with carts pulled by oxen and ponies and smoke-spewing buses. The buildings in the villages and the rice paddies were out of something like a Pearl Buck novel. Raw sewage ran down the sides of the roads, and when we finally arrived at the gates to Camp Walker, small children swarmed our car begging for money. And everywhere, so many people, none of whom looked remotely like me. Culture shock does not begin to describe it. And then, one day later, still in a daze, My sister and I were told to grab our suitcases and head down to the post-teen club, where we, along with a couple of dozen other teenagers of whom we knew none, were to take a bus down to the train station, take the train an hour south to Busan, take the bus to Hialeah compound, the army post in Busan. And there we were taken to our repurposed army barrack dorm and Busan and, excuse me, if you can go to the next slide. The one on this side is my repurposed dorm. The Quonset huts on this side are Busan American High School. The Quonset huts obviously were also repurposed. I was to continue this routine for 2 years of departing on Sunday afternoon for school and returning Friday evenings. I was an introverted, socially immature freshman, and those first few days and few weeks were mind-numbingly terrifying at so many different levels. I couldn't tell you which was scarier, the new reality of where I was living or the fact that I was in a dorm with a group of older teens who all seemed light years older than me, many in torn jeans and headbands and total 1960s hippie attitudes about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Fortunately, I soon realized that those cool kids were not nearly as intimidating as they originally appeared. While they might have engaged in a few more nefarious activities than I, we shared a powerful bond simply by living under such unique circumstances. A bond that proved stronger than social standing or the common interests that separate high school teens back in the States or in larger schools. And yes, that's me in the polyester pantsuit. I was not cool. Any reflection on my time in Korea has to acknowledge my identity as a military dependent, which meant that I lived in, but not quite in, the country of Korea. I lived on U.S. military compounds surrounded by soldiers, one in Daegu with my family, one in Busan with my classmates. However, unlike our parents, who all seemed very happy to just stay on compound, we teens loved exploring the country. The shock of poverty soon faded, and the excitement of new experiences and lots of freedom to explore soon beckoned us. Every weekend, we took off in Korean taxis to downtown Daegu and nearby parks. We didn't speak Korean, and very few Koreans spoke English, but we communicated just fine. With rare exceptions, we were treated with kindness, or at least a polite tolerance. We were constantly surrounded by young Koreans waiting to practice their English on us or have their pictures taken with us. There is no doubt that these experiences contributed to my desire to travel and meet people different from me. There are always people eager to connect and tell their stories if you seek them out. When I arrived in Korea, and for months after, I never believed I would be sad to return to the States, but I was. Life has a way of surprising you. Sometimes the most challenging of situations turn out to be the most life-affirming. I still get misty-eyed, and I don't know if I can do this, when I hear the lyrics to John Denver's 1969 hit, because I lived those lyrics in 1972 when returning to the States. Leaving on a jet plane, don't know when I'll be back again. Oh, babe, I hate to go.